Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. I'm your host, Jason Tarnick, and welcome to the pre-market trading segment where I'll tell you a little bit about our guest, an update from the market, and an update on my personal life. Before we do that, make sure to grab a copy of Talk Money to Me on Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you buy a book, or you can get the Audible version. If you are single, it is a perfect personal finance journal and book to help you increase your overall wealth and build your wealth. And if you're in a relationship, it will help you do the same and with your partner as a unit. So make sure you check it out. It was on the bestseller list of love and romance, wealth management, budgeting and money management, and personal finance. So that is super exciting. Now, today's guest, I don't know if you watched the Masters at all last weekend, but we have the 2017 Masters champion, one of the best golfers literally to ever touch the planet, Sergio Garcia. You're going to hear a lot about his time on the PGA and his transition to the LIV. You'll hear so much about his exploration as a golfer, as an athlete, the ins and outs, mentally, tips and tricks to become one of the best at whatever it is that you're doing. Whether you're into golf or you're not into golf, this does not become a technical episode, but this will become an episode where you can take unbelievable trading secrets from one of the most well-known golfers to ever live, one of the best athletes to live, with unbelievable earnings and respect within his sport. So no matter what fan of golf you are, 1 through 10, this will be an episode for you. Now, a little update from the market that I want to make sure that I drop. A majority of Americans, 95%, said they plan to look for a new job this year, according to a January 2024 survey done by Job Site Monster. Money is the big reason, with 45% of workers saying they need higher income. Now, data from the Federal Reserve shows that the job switchers increase their salaries more quickly on average than those who stay put. So here we go. It all comes to talking money. If you talk money to your peers, to your industry, to recruiters, to job seekers, you can understand what people are getting paid and why and make the best decision for you. And that actually connects to this episode. This actually connects to this episode where you're going to hear, you know, there's about $54 million that Sergio made in his career on winnings in the PGA, but with LIV in just 27 events, he's made over $20 million. So imagine 23 and a half years of your life, you have made just about half of that in 2.5 years by transitioning elsewhere. You're going to hear all about those details, but that's something you should be aware of. And talking money is what you got to do. And that's where my book, Talk Money to Me, will help you. A little update for my personal life. I'm on a nice little cleanse back from tour. Tour was one of the most special times that I've ever had. I can't believe the turnouts. I can't believe that 95% of all questions were connected to the book, Money Management, Career Management, and Talking Money. It truly feels like what we are trying to do is working. And this week, I'll actually be on Jennifer Hudson's show. This week, we are having the book tour wrap party on April 19th. All those winners have been announced on Trading Secrets. And I'll tell you what, I am feeling a little down. I don't know. I think it's the down from the high of the tour. And it's just, you know, the quiet after the unbelievable, I hate to use the word storm, but has me feeling a little bit down lately, but also gives me time to reflect, which is what I need, and be grateful and fill my cup up for me and not outside activities that fill my cup up. So that's just me being honest and raw with you. But enough of that. Let's ring the bell with the one and only, one of the best golfers to ever walk the planet, that has gone toe to toe, eye to eye, and shot for shot with Tiger Woods. Let's bring in Sergio Garcia. Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, we are joined by professional golfer, 2017 Masters champion, and newly joined LIV Tour golf professional, Sergio Garcia. Sergio has spent most of his career in the top 10 official world golf rankings, having won 39 career titles and well over $50 million in tournament earnings. Sergio has supplemented his on-course earnings also with several brand partnerships. In recent news, Sergio became
one of the many PGA Tour golfers to switch over to the newly formed golf tour, the LIV Tour. Many golf professionals, executives, and media outlets have been critical of golfers who would leave behind the spots on the PGA Tour for LIV, but we are seeing that momentum change significantly. Today, we are going to chat about what a career in the PGA Tour is like, how Sergio keeps himself mentally and physically trained to be a professional golfer, the dollars and cents, of course, and the business strategy behind the career moves he's made, and why Sergio, Masters champion, thank you for being on Trading Secrets.
My pleasure, Jason. Thanks for having me.
It is an honor. All right. Now, I could have kept going with the resume, but I had to stop somewhere so we could get this interview off. But I want to take a stroll down memory lane. You may or may not remember this, but it's a moment I won't forget. And I've talked to Macklemore because he's been on the show, and he didn't forget it either. August 2021, BMW Championship. We were walking down the first hole, and I asked you, how many rounds do you play per year? And then Macklemore guessed, and then I guessed. We were both way off. You told us at that time it was around 325 rounds you played per year. We were blown away, but you said to Ben, who's Macklemore, you said, but think about your craft, music. You have to practice music every day. So I have a question for you for people back at home. Most people hate their jobs. When you're playing 325 days a year, most of your living life is playing your career. What advice would you have for someone that's like, I'm in a career that I just don't like? Do you have to be obsessed? Is it motivation? Is it discipline? Like, what keeps you that focused?
Well, I mean, to me, to be totally honest, I just love what I do. So that obviously helps. To me, like going to practice or going to play a round with friends and have a little game, a little match or something, to me that's fun. So it's practice and it's work ethic and getting ready to, you know, for tournaments and stuff like that. But to me it's fun. So I never see it as work. Obviously, I'm very fortunate, and unfortunately not a lot of people can say that, because I'm doing, like, actually my job, it's what I love doing. So yeah. that's if you can find that, that's the ideal thing. A lot of people, unfortunately, they get a job that maybe is not their favorite, but they need it, because you know, you need to live and you need to provide for yourself and your family and stuff like that. So I always feel very, very fortunate about that. If you can do what you love, I mean, that's the ideal spot, I guess.
Yeah. So then there are some athletes though that are like at your category, like a Tom Brady, right? Where he comes out and says, listen, I love what I do, but also I'm putting in that extra work to be the best. So when you're at that point, where even though you love it, but you're getting, I don't know, just a little tired some, do you have any strategies or tactics or anything to like stay focused, stay disciplined, continue to work when you don't want to work? Or for you, is it the love that always keeps you ahead?
Well, there's several things. I think that, to me, funny enough, I try to keep myself busy with other things. Huh. And that helps me be more focused when I'm practicing or playing golf. So like, I love playing tennis. I've always been a huge soccer fan, and I played soccer when I was younger, and I played once in a while. So things like that, you know, I love driving, I love cooking. So all those things, to me, I've always everyone is different, but I felt like when I'm doing those things, I'm not thinking about golf.
Interesting.
So it helps me kind of disconnect, recharge batteries, and then when I'm going back to practicing or playing, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited about it. I wanna be there, you know. So I think that, you know, it's just finding that fine tune that makes that kind of clicks.
Yeah, I think it's really good advice, because if you think about people that have downtime, if you're not doing that downtime to be productive with other things, then you might be too focused on what your actual main thing is. And I think that's a great piece of advice for people back home. We'll get into the dollars and cents. We'll get into all that, but we gotta go to where it started. So you started playing golf at 3. Your father was your coach, Victor. There are parents back home that have kids that are athletic and they don't know what direction to go, especially these days. Do you have your kids play many sports? Do you just focus on one? Do you make this sport a priority over school? Things like that. being that you started so young, you won so young, you became a professional so young, what advice would you have for the parents that are listening now with younger kids when it comes to athletics?
Yeah, it's great question. You know, obviously I can tell you what I feel it's right for, like for Angela and myself, mm-hmm. with our kids, for example. It doesn't mean that that's, you know, ideal for everyone, mm-hmm. but we have, for example, our daughter Azalea, and she's doing golf, soccer, tennis, gymnastics. She's doing music. So I always thought, and I always said that, you know, I wanted our kids to be involved in sports, and Enzo is trying to do some of those things too, because I feel like it's a healthier environment. It's a healthier life. And I think nowadays everything is with so easily within our arm's reach, you know, dangerous things, that if you can be around athletes, if you can be around sports people, it always feels like you're more in the right track, not only physically, but also mentally. You know, you play sports, so you know the mental side of it, and how much you have to mature and grow and think about what you're doing. So and you have to be, you know, if you want to be decent at any of these sports, you have to be focused, and you have to go in a certain path. You know, you can't be doing all sorts of things. So I like them to obviously at some point pick one and see where they go. But you know, as a youngster, just that's what I did too.
Yeah.
I played golf, soccer, football, tennis. You know, I would play anything I could get my hands on.
I love it. Serge already alluded to the mental fortitude. We're going to get into that, because you have walked next to some of the greats. You've battled with Tiger Woods. You had a complete showdown for your Masters. So we're going to get into some of the tips and tricks of how you stay focused in such high pressure situations. But one follow-up question. I think the idea of being surrounded by sports is great for any kids, especially as they're developing. You had mentioned at some point you'd like them to pick one. And for you as a parent, is there a certain age you think that in today's world you kind of have to get singular?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think that probably definitely on your teens, okay. I would say. Like for me, it was probably when I was probably 12 or 13.
Okay.
I definitely got even more focused into golf. I still play a little bit of tennis and soccer, but I definitely started just like focusing a bit more. I think that it's just a matter of a couple of things. What the kid loves.
Yeah.
Most importantly, I think it's important for the kid to be willing to go and play that sport, not having to push him to play that sport, because you don't want him to get burned out, you know, like that. So, and that's where we're going with loving what you do, you know.
Yeah.
So if, you know, whatever it is. And then usually it's around that age, you know, 12, 13, 14.
Okay.
You can see what you're excelling more at.
Yeah.
And you know, if the kid is in love with that sport, then you can kind of guide them that way a little bit. But I think it's important for them to also make a little bit of a decision in what really drives them, you know.
Starting a business isn't easy, and trust me, I have faced my share of ups and downs. From the early days of building my business, navigating challenges, to facing the struggles of filing taxes, it's been a ride. But here's the game changer, TurboTax Live Business. You get unlimited year-round advice and answers from an expert who specializes in small business taxes. They can even completely file for you from start to finish, backed by a 100% accurate expert-approved guarantee. Hand your taxes to TurboTax Live Business today so you have more time to grow your business. See guaranteed details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. Experts only available with Intuit TurboTax Live.
You're 43. You're still thriving. You're still working every day. If you're forced into that, if you're pushed into it, there's no way at 43 you're still focused. You'll be burnt out, right?
Yeah,
so the idea,
most likely.
I would think that. All right, so let's go to that. I think it's a good transition to 43. The pillars of this podcast are financial well-being, professional well-being, personal well-being. These are like the three pillars. So I want to talk about these pillars because now you are 43. You look back at, you know, your, let's say your teenage self who wins their first professional tournament as an amateur and then becomes a professional in your teenage years. I want to hit those three pillars real quick. Let's start with financial because it's trading secrets. Mm-hmm. You're telling your 18-year-old self right now, one high, one low over your 20-plus careers when it comes to golf. Let's start with financial. What is the one high? You'd be like, hey, 18-year-old Serge, this is awesome. This check, this moment, this deal, this tournament we won. I bought my first something. What are you telling him? This is your financial high.
I don't know. I've been very fortunate because I've had a really good career. It's still going, obviously. but I've been very fortunate. Obviously, I worked really hard and I played well, and I've been able to make a good amount of money. I mean, to me, I have always said it, not only for what it gives you personally, but for me as a professional way, for my profession, I think that when I bought my first plane, that was, you know, that was probably one of the biggest things and one of the probably most important things that I did for my career. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, even though, don't get me wrong, it's an expensive toy to have, but definitely the amount of time that I save, and time is something that you cannot buy. Yeah. The amount of time that I save throughout a year, like when we looked at it, we realized that I was going to be able to save around between 22 and 26 days a year.
Wow.
In traveling.
Interesting.
So, yeah, because, you know, I was able to leave home later. I was able to fly to the tournaments closer. Mm-hmm. I was able to leave the tournaments earlier.
Yeah.
Like as soon as I finished, like a lot of the times when we were living in Europe, playing here in the US a lot, you know, if you're in contention, you're finishing at 6, 7 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
By that time, you go to the airport, pretty much every single flight going to Europe is done.
Interesting.
So you have to wait another day.
Okay.
So you have to fly the Monday instead of the Sunday. Then for me, where I was in Spain, for example, you'll be flying to Madrid. Madrid is 3.5 hours drive from where I'm from. So,
okay.
So it's extra time that mm-hmm. you don't think about it, but once you go down and you say, okay, you're making a big decision, obviously financial decision,
yeah.
to buy a private plane, then you go like, okay, so, you know, if I can save all these days where I can spend it with family, I can do, you know, a couple corporate days here and there and make yeah. a little bit of extra money, and that helps me pay for the expenses of the plane, something like that. So it's interesting.
That, I mean, I'm sure teenage Serge would be like, wow, you bought a plane. That's pretty damn cool. You can pass on this question, but I have to ask because if I don't, they'll yell at me. Roundabout, how much does a plane cost? Like $10 million?
It depends on what you want to buy.
Because it just varies. Yes. All of them vary.
Obviously,
okay.
Depending how big it is. But yeah, but like the first one I bought, which was a smaller one, and then I had to make yeah. a couple of extra stops flying from Europe to here.
Yep.
Yeah, it was probably around 12,
okay.
12 $13 million,
okay.
something like that.
Very cool.
It wasn't in my teens. It was in my 20s. But
yeah. Oh, no, I was saying teenage Serge would be yeah, like, yeah, that's yeah. cool. 20s getting a plane. That's pretty cool. All right. Financial high. With highs come lows. For everyone back home, they feel it too. Can you think of any financial lows throughout your career, or maybe a time, maybe you made an investment that didn't go well, or just a time that like finances were, or something financially within your career was a low?
Yeah. I had, again, I've been very fortunate. I had some great people around me help me invest my money and done very well on it. So good. With not a lot of risk. So that's obviously I'm very thankful for that and the people that I've been involved and I am involved with at the moment. But I do have obviously one moment which was tough because it was a plane and you know it was pretty much a brand new plane that I bought and you know the company that I bought it. I think I had the plane for probably about a year or so. So it was pretty new, bought it from brand new. And the company started struggling. You know, we obviously asked, you know, we had people that we thought they were friends,
sure,
and in the company, and we asked, hey, is everything okay? And they were like, no, don't worry, they're gonna come, someone's gonna buy us, it's gonna be fine, don't worry about it. Because obviously we're thinking, you know, if something happens, we want to sell before it's too late.
Yeah.
So we asked several times, no, don't worry, you know, it's gonna happen, just give us some months, give us some months. So 6, 7, 8 months go by, the company goes bankrupt.
Oh.
And, you know, and obviously our plane goes from whatever, $18 million to $5 million.
Wow.
So that was a big, you know, that was a big loss. But, you know, fortunately, like I said earlier,
yeah,
my other money was well invested and was well taken care of. So we were able to make up for it and stuff. And, you know, we're still doing great, but yeah, it was tough. But,
yeah,
you know, it happens.
Those things
you know,
happen.
You have good moments and bad moments, but you know, we kind of got through it, and you know, we're fine. So
I love it. That's why I love asking the question, because a lot of times we only see the highlights, we don't see those stories or hear about them, but they exist. We all have to bounce back in some capacity, whether it's 15 million or 15 bucks. Everyone's got to bounce back, right? It's just different times. Let's go to professional high. I would imagine it's the Masters, but what is your professional high that you're telling your teenage surge, this is what's going to happen in your professional world?
Yeah, definitely Masters.
Yeah.
It's one of them. Fortunately, one of my highs was when I was a teenager, the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
My first Ryder Cup. And obviously all the Ryder Cups I've played, but those are professionally my two, like, highs.
Okay.
Like the Masters 17 and every single Ryder Cup I've played, winning or losing, because they're all special. Obviously the winning ones even more. But the one in 99, my first one, and to turn pro in April, at the end of April,
yeah,
and be able to make the team on my own in September, like,
it's incredible.
5, 6 months later, it was something that obviously I didn't have in my mind at the beginning of the year. I was hoping that I would make some Ryder Cups, but I didn't think I was going to make that first one. So that was amazing, even though we lost it,
yeah,
on Sunday in Brooklyn, in Boston, but it was unbelievable. The experience was just, there's nothing in the world like it.
All right, I have some.
Have you been to one of them?
Oh yeah, I was at the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits, and it's so much fun. I mean, the energy is just unlike anything, and it's obviously with LIV, there's a team aspect now, mm-hmm, but in other areas of golf, there's never a team aspect.
No.
So to see the best players like yourself and everyone else, like, come together, you know, putting your arms over each other, rooting as one, and representing countries in many countries. Yeah. There's just nothing like that other than the Olympics.
One, yeah, and that one was great, but it wasn't as good because it was right after COVID or right kind of
after
COVID.
Yeah.
So there was very little European support.
Yeah, that's probably why I was like, this is awesome. It's all USA, USA.
I know, but as good as that is,
you want representation.
You want a little bit of both.
Yes.
So then you can see both.
Yeah.
Both.
And you can meet
crowds.
People.
Yeah.
And like, Todd, be like, okay, where are you from? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, it's camaraderie. Yeah. That's a good, I didn't think about that.
So you have to go.
We'll have to go back to another one.
Where everything is, obviously, yeah, whatever we play, there's always going to be more. If we're playing Europe, there's going to be more European fans and stuff.
Yeah.
If we're playing the US, the same way for the US. But when you can get the mix and the energy that you can see, the energy that you feel on the course is just amazing.
Nothing like that. All right, I'm going to definitely go to another Ryder Cup. And for my golf listeners here that are new to the show, I will get to Ryder Cup and Masters. It's coming, I promise.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Give therapy a try at betterhelp.com/tradingsecrets today. Now, I could tell you this, therapy has changed my life in so many ways. It has led me to understand who I am and why I am and where I am today and what makes me and when I'm deregulated, how to get regulated and to make sure that I'm responding and not reacting and putting the right boundaries in place. And with BetterHelp, you could be on your way too. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. You'll just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Trust me, it's changed my life. Visit betterhelp.com/tradingsecrets to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/tradingsecrets.
Let's end this segment with one professional low. Lowest moment in your 20 plus year career.
It's funny, like, I know that a lot of people would say probably the British Open 2007 when I lost that in a playoff and I had the putt to win mm-hmm. the title and stuff like that. Obviously, yes, that was a bit of a low, but and at that moment it was a very big low. Like for me, as a 27 year old with already having had a couple of chances of winning majors and being close and not getting it done and having my big chance there until then, it was a big low. But then after, I thought about it, you know, a couple of weeks after I was in Spain, and I remember I was walking on the beach and trying to kind of get my head straight, and I was like, hold on, I know that you just lost the British Open and obviously I wanted to win it so badly, but why are you making it such a bad thing, such a bargain on you when you did so many good things mm-hmm. to put yourself in a winning position, and you're just focusing on what happened on the last hole and then the playoff? So obviously it was a good learning experience,
yeah,
and it helped me to see that yes, obviously we want to win, and that's what we practice for, and that's what we love doing, but it's not just the main thing.
Yeah,
sometimes you also have to realize that you know. I mean, I know that people say, you know, the second place is the first loser.
Yeah,
I understand that, but you know, I'd rather be the first loser than the 20th loser.
Sure.
You know, I'd rather be second than 30th or something like that, because at least I know that if I'm second, most likely I've had a chance of winning.
Yeah.
If I'm 30th,
I weren't even in the mix.
I probably won't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just the way you look at it.
Yeah.
But that was at that moment that was a low, because I felt like I had it.
Yeah,
and I felt like I did so many good things to win it.
Yeah,
and you know, it was a rough, probably week or so after that. But,
yeah,
but I'm glad I was able to find the positive side of it.
I think personally, professionally, we all hit lows, and we all resort to different things and then learn from it. In any of your lows, it's a form of, like, some people have a tough day at work, they get home and they got to have a couple drinks. Was there any behavioral things you did in your lows that now you change, or did you resort to anything, or was it all like, did you have anything that got you back and focused? Like, when you look back at your 20s, how did you cope with that? This is more of a psychological question.
Yeah, but I think for me, it was family, you know, family and friends.
Yeah.
Having good
just
family
getting you
and
back.
Friends. Yeah. And like I said earlier, being able to have something else to go for.
Yeah, just distracting with other things. Yeah.
Go and play tennis or play paddle tennis.
Yeah.
Like we do in Spain.
Yep.
Play soccer or something like that.
Okay.
That helped me kind of disconnect and conserve energy and not use all that energy into bad thoughts and thinking what happened. And obviously, you know, until the last probably 5 or 6 years, I didn't really use a mental coach or anything like that. So I kind of worked everything myself and with my family and friends.
Yeah. And do you use a mental coach now?
Yes. Now I've been working with one, a good friend of mine, and it's great, but it's, you know, it's just finding little ways of making things better and then kind of like getting stuff out and you know, just kind of not keeping it,
not internalizing.
Right.
It's yeah, I've talked about this. It's you gotta name what you're feeling, then you gotta drain it. And it's interesting that even people at your level have to do that with mm-hmm. mental coaches. And I think what I'm taking away too, if I take that out of golf, you weren't focused on what's for, you know, you're not focused on winning. You're focused on the next shot.
Mm-hmm.
You're focused on small wins. You're focused on building momentum with that birdie and 14 and that I think anyone, no matter what you do back home, can take that into their lives. Focus on the small wins. The rest will come. I have to ask you this as a golfer. There are times I sit over a putt with three of my friends and we're playing for $50. I start shaking. My heart rate's going. Are you doing things to keep like your actual adrenaline down, your heart rate low, in what is probably the most critical 3-4 holes of your entire life? Like, are you managing your heart rate? Are you doing breathing tactics to slow down?
Yes, without a doubt. Yeah, like I said earlier, obviously there's moments when you feel better than others. But I think that at the end of the day, when you get nervous, usually what you do is you start either not breathing or hyperventilating. So what I always try to tell myself, it's, you know, when I start feeling my heart going up, and those are good things because it means that you care. You
know? Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, but at the same time, you want to be as calm as possible once you hit in your shot. So important to take long breaths.
Okay.
You know, in and out, in and out. And then you can feel your, I think the problem is sometimes you get nervous and you feel it, like you're getting nervous. You're so focused on your nervousness,
you lose focus of what's in front of you.
Correct. And you forget to breathe. You're not focusing on your breathing. You're focused on your breathing. You kind of forget about the other stuff too a little bit because you're so focused on your breathing and calming down that kind of helps you relax a little bit too. So that's, I think that's always important.
I talk about it in my book, but did you know that money issues are a main leading cause of divorce? Well, Monarch, the top-rated finance app, has a built-in collaboration feature so that you can invite your partner at no extra cost. So, Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. And you could create custom budgets to track progress toward financial goals and collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/secrets. After trying out Monarch for myself, I see why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/secrets. That's monarchmoney.com/secrets for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/secrets for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, let's get to some of the economics. We're talking about Masters. Just curious, you win the Masters. What do you get paid when you win the Masters? What does a check like that look like?
It's probably less than what people might think.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a good check. I think it was like 1.2 or something like that.
Okay. And then I assume when you win the Masters, though, brand partnerships and opportunities, the value of that probably much outweighs that 1.2 million, correct? Like that value is absolutely, what was the biggest, was there a big life-changing moment after you won the Masters you'll never forget? Like you get a call from a big brand or a big opportunity?
There's obviously, I mean, I've like you said, like I've had a really good career.
Yeah.
I've been in the top 10 for pretty much most of my career. So my contracts have always been decent.
Yeah.
They've always been good because of that. So what happens when you win the Masters, obviously you start renewing with a lot of your So obviously, you know, it brings renewals a little bit of a raise and stuff like that. But you know, for me it was pretty much the same companies that I was with, just kind of renewing for another 5 years or something like that, raising a little bit the fees. And then the only one that kind of really changed was golf brand, clubs, a manufacturer.
Yeah.
That I went with a different company that I was at that time, which was, I was playing TaylorMade. Unfortunately, it didn't work, but that was probably the biggest change on my contracts at that time.
Pretty cool. Okay, I want to talk about Ryder Cup 2018. You become all-time leading Ryder Cup record point scorer. You had already mentioned the passion you have for it, and how it's a career high. There was some conversation and articles written about Patrick Cantlay, who didn't wear his hat because he was a little frustrated with the whole payment and financials behind the Ryder Cup. My understanding is whether you're Team USA or Team Europe, you're not paid to play and you have to get there on your dime and you're not paid any capacity if you win. So naturally, it will 100% be a financial loss. Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not. You like, they pay for your expenses.
Okay.
So that's all paid. You don't get paid to play, and you don't get paid. I mean, I think now they're starting to do like a little payment for charity.
Okay.
And they give you
that's good.
Some money, not a lot, some money, and then you can put it like for charity and stuff like that. I think that's the beauty of the Ryder Cup. That's what keeps it so unique and so true that we actually play for pride.
Yeah.
We get paid, like they pay us for our travel expenses and our hotels and all that stuff. The team takes care of all of that. But when it comes down to getting paid to play it or if you win it or don't, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, because it seems like the sport of golf and money, there's never been more of like two subjects that are now taking up the entirety of the sport, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's good to hear that from your perspective, you're like, that's a play for pride tournament. That's not a go cash your check tournament. Do you think the landscape of even the Ryder Cup and what's happening now will look dramatically different in 3 to 5 years as people like you that have such a legacy within the Ryder Cup aren't playing in it for X, Y, and Z reasons? Like, do you think there becomes a new Ryder Cup? Do you think that all changes?
I hope not. I mean, obviously, like, I'm not giving up on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking my European Tour membership again to at least give myself the best chance possible of trying to make the team.
Yeah.
And be eligible for it. But I hope it doesn't, because that's what keeps the Ryder Cup pure. And even though you don't get paid, if you make the Ryder Cup team, if you play in the Ryder Cup team, like we were saying earlier, your contracts that do go up a little bit. So you don't make it that week, but you do make it on appearance and stuff like that. So it's not like you do make it, but not in that week.
Yeah. The whole idea of economics in all sports is changing drastically. We see it even with like NIL, with these NCAA athletes. Now all of a sudden there's all this money being thrown at them, right? Where before there wasn't. I think we've seen it a little bit with PGA and LIV. Obviously LIV comes along and now all of a sudden purses are higher at PGA and competition drives change essentially. When you think about that, I looked in 2022, it looked like your tournament earnings were over $6 million in just one season with LIV, which I think was about 3 times higher on average than your tournament winnings with PGA. When you think about that and the change that's happening, what's your overall sentiment of how it's changing and the fact it's changed this fast?
Well, at the end of the day, I think it just shows you that competition is good.
Yeah.
It's good for everyone. I think it happens in every single spot in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter if it's sports or, different kinds of company. You know, the only thing that drives you to get better is competition. Why did I turn pro when I was 19? Because I felt like the only way I was going to get better at golf and what I loved doing was by me playing with the professionals, which was the biggest, the highest competition I could get. I felt like if I stayed an amateur, I was going to hit a plateau, and I didn't want that.
Yeah.
So it's companies, doesn't matter if it's companies, sports, whatever it is, the only way that things get better and the only way that technology gets better is because another company comes out with something better, something different. So it pushes everyone to improve.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And I think that's what LIV has done to golf and to the PGA Tour. You know, it's just pushed them to realize that, even though we've been the best tour in the world for many, many years, there's someone here that is actually pushing us and we need to evolve and become better.
Twillery offers stylish, performance-driven suits, shirts, polos, and jeans designed for every aspect of the busy individual's life. Their clothes are wrinkle-resistant with plenty of stretch to keep you comfy, and yes, they're machine washable. That is huge. Folks love the new air suit, which is perfect for spring and summer. Mesh fabric is lightweight, so you will stay cool, and they keep selling out, so get them while they're in stock. Their long sleeve performance button downs are as comfortable as your favorite t-shirt, but look stylish enough for the office or even a date night. Special new customers now will get 18% off of $139 or more. You'll just use code JTA18. That's 18% off $139 or more.
We saw the 2024 schedule looks pretty jam-packed. I also love the team concept, because I think it connects kind of a little bit to the whole F1 concept, mm-hmm. which is taking the world by storm. I got to ask you about legacy, though. So over the summer, you made a comment about how switching to LIV might have an impact on your chances of being elected to the World Golf Hall of Fame. When you look at professional legacy, or anyone back home that looks at it, I think we all define it. Legacy isn't what other people think. Legacy is what I make it. For you, when you made that decision and you think about today, do you get at all worried about your legacy? Does not making the World Golf Hall of Fame, when it comes to your professional resume, keep you up at night? How do you feel about that?
No, it doesn't keep me up at night. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, it's like I always say, you know, the more sugar, the sweeter. So it's as simple as that. But it doesn't mean...
I like that.
it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm going to change my view on my career and what I was able to achieve, or my family, or my friends, or really my fans. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, at the end of the day, yes, if you're inducted in the Hall of Fame, yes, it's great. It's a tremendous honor. But does that make your career? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it's, at the end of the day, you have to be happy with what you've done. You have to be proud of what you've done. And I'm very proud of what I've done and what I'm doing. And, you know, that's, at the end of the day, that's all I can really do. I can make other people, you know, think what I want them to think or anything like that. You know, I just can give them like different options, mm-hmm. and subjects to talk about me and things that I've done, and then they can make their own opinions, I guess.
You're doing it your way, the way you see it, and the rest is left up for everybody else. Okay, I could sit here and talk to Sergio all day. I have a million more golf questions, but we only have so much time. So one more question for you, and then we're gonna do a little rapid fire and we'll get your trading secret. We talked about your impact on the golf course, the dollars, the cents, the personal and professional achievements. Let's talk about some of the impact. This weekend, we're actually in Austin for 4Kids ATX. The event was absolutely incredible. The after party and live music was amazing. And guys, stay tuned to the recap, because I have some funny golf stories I'm going to tell you. But we talked dollars and cents here, and I saw there was auction items. There was the Valderrama and Lucia LIV packages. I think they went for over $100,000. I mean, it was mayhem. It was so great. And to know that all that money is going to the charity, the not-for-profit that you and Angela started, impacting so many kids, is amazing. Tell me a little bit, if you can, how much did you guys raise this weekend?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, like you said, Jason, amazing week, and we couldn't be happier and prouder, and even we couldn't be more thankful to everyone that was involved, including you guys coming in and supporting, and our donors, everyone that came and put money in and bid for some of these amazing auction items that we had. And obviously, like you said, LIV Valderrama and Lucia Valderrama, you know, was one of them. So yeah, it's been amazing. We're super happy about it. Last year, it was already a great event that we had here in Austin. I think obviously before expenses and stuff like that, we were able to raise, I think it was $2 million last year, which we're super proud, you know, in like two nights. And this year we even topped that off, and I think we don't have the actual finished numbers yet, but mm-hmm. but it looks like 2.3, 2.4. So super happy and super thankful for everyone that was a part of it. Yeah. And donated and helped you know, all this money is going to go to kids, community, families here around around Austin, and you know, it just feels amazing to be able to help so many people, and everyone should be very proud of it.
It's incredible. That amount of money to be raised in this short period of time, I also think it connects to the full conversation we had, because we talk about how competition is good, and when competition is good and there's more monetization, those people can then create whatever legacy they want, and hopefully it is a good legacy. With more coming in, it gives you the opportunity to do more, and now have raised over $2 million for kids in 72 hours. It's amazing, it's impactful, and we talk about legacy. That's creating your own legacy, not worried about everybody else's noise. So cheers to both you and Angela. It was a hell of a weekend. All right, quick rapid fire, and then we'll get your trading secret. So I'm gonna ask you a few questions. The first thing that comes to mind, let me know what it is. I know you're a thinker. I know you're a very smart analysis guy. Don't overthink it. Okay. Trading secrets, rapid fire with Sergio Garcia. Here we go. What is one thing that you spend too much money on? You know you spend too much money on, but you're like, I gotta do it. It's for me. It's my convenience. It's my thing. What would it be?
I would say probably private planes.
Private planes. Okay. Who is the toughest person? You got to get matched up with someone. You got to go shoulder to shoulder, walk all day and play with them. Who is the toughest person? It could be either intimidation or just their annoyance, whatever it might be. Toughest person to play with.
I mean, Tiger Woods is the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah, that presence is something else. I think you have the same presence, because we golfed with Rick yesterday. He's a scratch golfer. You were around for two holes. He couldn't hit the ball. You left and he couldn't miss a ball. It's a real thing. All right, let's go to this. The biggest prize check, the biggest tournament check you got when you won an event, just for winning the event, what was it? How much?
Well, funny enough, I think my biggest check was this year in Singapore, in LIV Singapore, but I didn't win. I finished second. I think it was like 2.1 or 2.2 million, something like that. But as a winning check, I would have to say probably the Players' Championship. I think it was like 1.8 or something like that.
Very nice. Okay, inflation and obviously competition checks are getting bigger. You have to create a foursome today. The foursome has to include public figures, celebrities, politicians, whatever, very public figures. Who is in your foursome?
I mean, I have to put my dad, because, you know, I love him and he's done so much for me.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to just put four, because, you know, I want to put all the people that I love and family and stuff. But let's see, if we take family aside, mm-hmm. I will put Michael Jordan. I will put Ronaldo Nazario, which mm-hmm. is Brazilian striker, as you know.
Yeah.
Good friend. And probably, I don't know. Yeah, maybe a past, like a really, like a Ben Hogan.
That's a good group right there. But Michael Jordan, he's going to want to gamble. You know, he's going to want to bet like $100,000 the hole. Are you willing to gamble with Michael Jordan? That's the question.
Maybe we can bring the stakes down a little bit. Yeah.
I like what Chris Harrison said. Chris Harrison's like, I don't gamble with people that can lose any afford of money. I'm out on that. All right. I have a million more questions, but we will wrap with your trading secret, Sergio. It is one secret that people back home, they can't Google, they can't learn from a professor, they can't read in a textbook. The trading secret could be about life, money management, career management, anything, but it's special to your experience. So one trading secret with Sergio Garcia.
I like my things to be set up and arrived in a mm-hmm. special way, you know. So like my golf bag, you know, the clubs, they go in a certain spot. Mm-hmm. And if me or my caddy or someone else puts them in a different spot, I have to put it back in this spot. My zippers on the bag, they have to be all closed. Like if I see an open zipper, I have to close it. It just happens.
Yeah.
It's just that I have to do it. I don't know why. It just makes me feel right. So I guess I'm a little bit OCD when it comes down to some of those things.
Yeah, I think the idea of being like, you're meticulous. Mm-hmm. And whatever career it is that you guys have back home when you're listening, the more meticulous you are, the more planned you'll be, the more prepared, and maybe even the more easy you'll be at when you're doing your job. I rarely ask a follow-up question to a trading secret, but this is one I forgot and I have to ask before we wrap. Caddies. How do caddies get compensated?
Well, it depends a little bit on the player, but usually they get a weekly wage
okay.
for travels. And then you will do a percentage
of the winnings
of what you win that week.
Okay.
So usually maybe you do like 10% for a win.
Okay.
8% for top 10, and 6% for any other position that you finish. So
got it.
So usually that's how you do it. And then I you know, I think some other guys do it too, but I like to give them a little bonus at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And you know, they go through a lot with us.
Yeah.
Not only the traveling, but some of the punishment we put them through. So
yep.
So they deserve it.
He's a giving guy on the golf course with his caddies and with For the Kids ATX. Sergio, thank you so much for being on this episode of Training Secrets. We appreciate it. Insightful, impactful.
Thank
what
you.
You're doing on and off the golf course is incredible. So thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Ding, ding, ding. We are closing in the bell to the Sergio Garcia episode. Now, David, I'm sure you could hear it in my voice a little bit. I am recharged. I am rested. Haven't had a drink in 6 days. Have run 15 plus miles, eating clean, sleeping well, and I'm feeling good. And I'm glad I do, because what an episode. We've only had two other athletes on this podcast. We have had Rob Gronkowski and Alex Rodriguez, two Hall of Famers within their classes. And now we are adding a third future Hall of Famer, one of the best golfers to ever touch the planet, Sergio Garcia. And how timely, because he was a Masters champion back in 2017. And as everyone saw, the Masters wrapped up yesterday. Now, today we're actually recording. Spoiler, we're recording on Sunday, not the day this comes out, Monday. And as we're recording, because the Curious Canadian has a family party and we're prioritizing family over the most recent news, which I appreciate and respect, we have Scottie Scheffler in first place, Max Homa in second place, Colin Morikawa in third place. These are all actually three people, David, I've had the pleasure of meeting. So it is likely one of these three will win the Masters. But we're not here to cover sports and who wins the Masters. We're here to talk all about this episode. And David, I'm going to kick it to you in 1 second. But I think one of the interesting things about this podcast and what we're seeing in the public is, especially because we know if we look at strictly our demographics, we have about 80% women that listen to this podcast. We're seeing a really cool shift in ratings. This past year, the women's basketball championship game, the NCAA championship game, drew in 18.9 million viewers and surpassed the men's final of 14.8 million viewers. And obviously that was fueled by Caitlin Clark emerging as a superstar. But we're seeing a massive transition in the way we're consuming and the way we're watching and the demographics that are watching. And so it'll be really interesting to see how that also translates to all other sports. But most importantly, David, I know you are a big golfer. You are a coach of your high school golf team. You had to be pumped up about this episode. What do we think?
Great little recap of the recap there, Jay. I'm a huge Sergio fan. I was the captain of my high school golf team. People called me mini Sergio because people thought we had the same swing, and I loved to dress the way that he dressed. He was sponsored by Adidas back in the day. So I was pumped to have him on. I'm a hockey coach. I'm also the golf coach at my school. So there you go. This was two birds, one stone. The Masters is on. And I got to say, you referenced, you know, the women's final four and the numbers that outperformed the men. I think golf has been in the news an incredible amount in the last 18 months because of what's happening with the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour, as was referenced much in this episode. And also the Full Swing Netflix documentary that has been on too. I think that combined with the F1 and the Breakpoint for tennis is just such a way to get maybe the common or non-common fan more into the game, and smart PR move on building the characters, because unlike other sports where they're, you know, in uniforms or under helmets or padding, golfers are there. I mean, they are your market. That's how you sell the sport, is these people. Get them on the documentaries. And, you know, my wife, Ashley, she knows a lot of these people because we watch these things. So I think golf's in a really interesting point right now from a PR perspective. But tons to talk about. So tons to talk about in this episode.
Yeah, I think it's really cool, just even the social media dynamic, the impact it's had on sports. Like, I think there's something you could take away from The Bachelor, right? The Bachelor is a story arc, and people get very involved in these people's story. And you see people that go on one season of The Bachelor get more followers than some professional athletes that are on their TV every single day for 20 years. And I think it has to do with connection to the story. And like, I think, you know, I know that Sergio Garcia, we'll talk about some of the numbers. This man has made a whole lot of money and has had a ton of success. And even he is invested in a full social media team because it is so important for people to know your story through and through so that they continue to follow, and it also impacts the sport. So much to talk about, so many moving dynamics when we think about social media and athletes and even how that's impacting ratings and the NIL, how people are becoming so connected to these athletes that they're watching them play and listening to them the second they get off on their social media. It's a wild dynamic. But David, what I'm thinking is, because Liv has been in the news so often, and you are a high school coach and you were Mini Sergio back in your day, I was thinking maybe you could almost play. I could play the curious Tardik over here. You can be the one that informs us, because there's some jargon that was thrown around, right? We heard Liv, mm-hmm. we heard PGA, we heard Major, we heard Masters. So those people that are still with us that maybe don't know what's going on there, could you give us a little breakdown?
Yeah, I'll do it quick and easy, really simple. The four majors that are open to basically the top 100 golfers, let's say, in the world from the world golf rankings compete in the four majors. They're the Masters, which is happening right now, which is the only major that happens at one course in Augusta, Georgia, at Augusta National. Then you have the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and the British Open. And those rotate through courses in, obviously, the PGA and the U.S. Open in the United States, and the British Open over in Britain and the U.K. So those are the four majors. Those are the big majors. Those are what everyone competes for around the world. Now, in the majors, you have, or any PGA events, you have cuts. So there's four rounds, 18 holes. You have to make the cut, which is basically half the field, to get paid in these events. You don't make the cut, you don't get paid. They don't pay for your expenses. They don't pay for your travel. They don't pay for your anything. So you're on the hook for all that. Your caddy, you're on the hook for travel, your own food. You have to make the cut to get paid. Enter the LIV Tour. So the LIV Tour is a Saudi-backed, funded league through the PIF in Saudi Arabia, which is basically an unlimited money source. And they are now competing with the PGA Tour. And how are they competing? Well, they're throwing boatloads of money at people. And it's really controversial because they've been able to lure some of the brightest stars away from the PGA Tour. So I could go on forever. So I'm going to kick it to you, Jay. Do you have any sub notes, any side questions before we really dive into the claws of the LIV Tour?
Yeah, it's caused a big mm-hmm. riff, but I think what's interesting is, can you give us just a little information for those on the that don't know? I love that. Yes. You're the one telling us now, but how the PGA and LIV have actually merged. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they're starting to merge. So what happened was, when the LIV Tour happened and all the top golfers left, then the PGA thought that they would be able to get control by banning them from all PGA events. Well, that didn't go over well with the PGA fans, because they want to see the top players, right? So now,
like Sergio.
Like Sergio, like Dustin Johnson, like Brooks Koepka, like Bryson DeChambeau, tons of these golf, Phil Mickelson. So tons of these golfers who got the bag to go over to LIV Tour, people want to see them play. That's why everyone locks into the majors. So now PGA has since kind of backpedaled, and now they're working on a business proposition to actually merge with them. Merging with them would solve a lot of things, because I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but the world golf rankings don't recognize the LIV Tour, because as I mentioned with the cuts, the LIV Tour plays a different format. They play 3 days instead of 4 days. There are no cuts. So every single player in the LIV Tour gets paid for every single event. And as you could tell by Sergio, said his biggest payout in his golf life was coming second place in the LIV Tour at $2.1 million. Trumped the Masters, which is the biggest golf tournament in the world's payout in 2017, which is $1.2 million. So there's a lot of money dynamics.
Absolutely. It's a lot of money dynamics and a lot to talk about. We won't get into all the weeds about, you know, the PGA and the LIV and all that stuff. This is definitely not the show for that. But I think one of my biggest takeaways is, when you see an opportunity and you jump on it, it could forever change your family's life. We saw some of the pro players stay loyal with PGA. They did not jump at the money opportunity. As a result, they're kicking themselves in the head, and they have even vocalized that they're kicking themselves in the head. Now, a quick dollar amount, and I'm going to kick it back to you, David, is we know, based on rumblings I heard, Sergio got over the $100 million mark. So it's a guarantee and works against a draw. But my understanding from the rumblings I heard is the minute that whatever that dollar amount was, they were like, give it to the attorney, sign it, and let's do it. And that probably connects to the fact that we know some of these things, right? We know that, at least online, it says that $54 million of career earnings were from the PGA. That's in 23 and a half seasons. And in just 24 or 27 events with LIV, he's made $20.1 million. So in 2 years, he has had more, he has had one half of his career earnings almost than he did in 23 and a half years. So guys, what I also think that's interesting that this connects to is like corporate America, like things that you do. You think like, how can you optimize your output to be making the most money you can so that you could be making in 2 years what you did in 23? And that's what we saw Sergio do. What do you got?
Well, I also think it's interesting too, because, and this is a work example, none of these players are were employees of the PGA Tour. They had to earn their paychecks. They're all contractors. So the PGA Tour didn't pay any of these employees, right? They earned the prize money through sponsorship. So people are wondering, oh, how could these people leave the PGA Tour? They were contractors. They weren't employed by them. They weren't employees of them. They had to pay for all their expenses, and they might not even get paid at the end of the tournament. So it's an interesting move. Sometimes we always talk about moving the corporate ladder and re-navigating your career. And would you agree? Sometimes you have to make a lateral move to get paid more money than trying to stay in the same company and climb the corporate ladder. This is just another example of that.
You have to zigzag if you're going to stay in corporate America. By zigzagging is taking other jobs at different places so that you can get the bigger bumps. And we're seeing it here, right? These are the you know, you think about the competition here. There's a lot of discussion on the background of all of it. And what makes sense and what doesn't, we'll stay away from that. What we will say is a competitor came in and a competitor put another league and program in a position where they had to be better. And now all of a sudden, PGA's got bigger dollars. They got bigger purses. Oh, yeah. Everything's changed. 2017, Masters was $1.2 million. 2024, it's now $3.2 million. So, you know, what I would say is, as a consumer, as an employee, when you make people think and you put some pressure on them and you talk money, it will work out in your favor.
The last two things I got as it relates directly to Sergio, because again, for me, an athlete, I was so dialed in. I think the athlete's mindset and perspective is different than a lot of maybe the reality TV people that we've had on. But I just thought two things really stuck out to me. One, I loved his answer when you said a financial high. Finally, someone who gave us like, you know, a big, big purchase of a private plane. But it reminded me of Jay of when you talked to your Rolex. He had, it was an investment. He saved 22 to 26 travel days a year, more time with his family. Can't buy time. So I thought that was really cool. And then I really, really liked, because he's an athlete and he does something that's in his passion. But if you're listening to this and you work and your passion or work is your life, he talked about having to stay extra busy away from work so he could disconnect, recharge. So when he was at work, he could focus and dial in. I thought that was something where it's like, wow, even when you're busy in your job that you love, you need to be busy outside of your job so that you can recharge and focus and dial in at that time. So that's my two big life takeaways as it relates to the Sergio episode. And I thought you crushed it. I thought it was great. It was a great job.
I appreciate it, my man. I mean, that is like the dream when your time becomes so valuable that a private plane is what makes sense. I'll also say this. I was so impressed with what a kind, thoughtful, down-to-earth human he is. We recorded this episode in his home. I met his wife. I met his kids. They were so lovely the entire time. He's so personable. And I literally have just the utmost respect for Sergio Garcia. I think what's interesting, too, is what we talked about early on, David, is when you see an athlete, you will characterize them as the way that they perform in their job. Well, the way they perform in their job, they're a product there. They are not themselves. They're a product. That is their job. And I think we got to see so much of Sergio on TV through his highs and lows and his most competitive moments against Tiger and his wins and losses. The side I've got to see and know of him is so much more special than the competitive side, because it is such a sweet, caring individual who continues to give back and support his community.
And just to end it, I don't know if you referenced it, but you played golf with him.
Yeah. I got to play it with him and Macklemore. We played in 18 holes at a pro-am. It was so much fun. And this is a guy who's getting ready to play a pro golf tournament the next day. And then I got to play in his charity event, which was such a great time. Played with Chris Harrison. Hannah Cook was in our group. I actually played with Angela. So his wife's father played in our group. Such a legend. He used to be a quarterback at Boston College and was just such a great guy. And it was honestly one of the coolest golf experiences I've ever had. I'll also end with this day, and that's he has a non-for-profit. Everyone could check it out. We talked about it in the episode. If you could donate to that, they give back to children in the community. But David, I think one thing that's really cool is I was golfing with a pro before Ben Crane, and one of my buddies goes, "What would you take, Ben? $20 million cash right now or winning the Masters?" And Ben Crane looked at my friend like he had 15 heads, like, how dare you ask me such an insulting question? And he was like, "I would, there is $0 amount ever you could offer me to exchange your Masters win. It is the most valuable thing any golfer in the world could have. There's no dollar amount you could put towards it." David talked about the four majors, the history at this place, because it has never, ever changed locations is like no other. And just like for people, David and I, just to have the chance to literally step ground on that course and watch people would be the highest honor. Both two things we've never been able to do. So imagine being able to play in it and then imagine winning.
It is the number one bucket list item that I have to do when it comes to things that I want to see or do in my life. The rules that they have at Augusta National, we have to say that maybe for another episode, because they're hilarious. Some of the rules, it's so rich in history. And like Ben Crane said, if you win the Masters, you get to compete in the Masters for the rest of your life. You get a lifetime exemption. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. I hope you're watching it or watched it. You took a little something out of this episode, a little golf business education and some tips from Sergio as well, because he's living the good life.
Exactly. And David, I'll tell you a little fun behind the scenes fact. Our agency, Rewired Talent Management, we were able to find a deal for Joey to go because he really wanted to go. So Joey is there. Joey got a plus one, but the plus one had to actually get approved through the brand. Like, they had to have a certain following and certain engagement, all that stuff. And at first, Kelsey wasn't going to be able to go. So Joey was going to bring me, and I went through the approval process, and they're like, "Oh yeah, he meets all our criteria. Perfect." Dude, I was so excited. But then Kelsey was able to pull it off. And quite frankly, you know, that's a memory that they'll have forever. And honestly, that's more important. But it was, I was like, on the tip
next
of my
year,
seat.
Next year, let's
like,
go. I'm gonna be able to go. Manifest it.
We'll try. Manifest. We'll try. We'll try. But David, thank you for coming in to recap this episode. You absolutely killed it, Sergio. Truly, from the Money Mafia to me, thank you for allowing us into your home. Thank you for podcasting and being so honest with us. We can learn so many things in our day-to-day life as we learn from living legends like yourself. So thank you all to tuning into another episode of Trading Secrets. Don't forget, we got two episodes a week right now. The second episode, we are calling More Than Money on Thursdays. So you'll have to check out this episode of More Than Money. It's a very, very interesting episode on education, okay? And all the things that come with it. So more to come with that. Thank you for tuning into another episode of Trading Secrets, one you can't afford to miss.